This is Fresh Air. My guest is Joel Forrester, and he's the composer and pianist behind such Fresh Air favorites as Lobster in the Limelight. Here's another one of Joel's, Off Color. These are two of the records that we play the most on Fresh Air. They both feature the Microscopic Septet. Joel is the group's pianist and co-founder and writes a lot of the group's music. But like most of the members of the Micros, he plays in several other groups as well. And lately he's been doing a lot of solo work at New York clubs. Although I've managed to see the Micros several times in the past year, my trips to New York have never coincided with Joel's solo dates. So I invited him to perform at the piano in Fresh Air's Philadelphia studio so we all could listen. Joel Forrester, welcome to Fresh Air.
Oh, gee, Terry. Let me just say from the jump that it's a gas to play live here on Fresh Air.
Why don't you get us started with a tune?
Well, yes, I'd like to start with a tune called Stop the Music.
Great. That's Joel Forrester at the piano. Joel, I've heard you play with the Micros and heard your records and stuff, and I think a lot of your playing and composing, you know, really combines elements of early jazz and elements of the avant-garde. How did you start doing that? How did those two come together for you?
Well, I think they just sort of appeared before my ears, but so many different kinds of music have meant the world to me, mm-hmm. that eventually that became the world, I would say. And I didn't think I could scant one, you know, and emphasize another. Just so many different forms of jazz just seemed to have announced themselves to me to be ready to be played. I couldn't imagine really playing without boogie-woogie, playing without bebop, playing without New Orleans music from the turn of the century.
Was it hard for you to find people to play with?
Eventually, in New York, people came around. But I think that the unifying factor among us was love for Thelonious Monk and the whole weird tradition in jazz.
The weird tradition in jazz.
That's right. We found that wherever we were coming from, the lightning rod of Monk's music allowed us to have a suspicion that we might be able to make music together.
Can you play something for us that will give us a sense of the weird strain? Is that the way you put it?
Oh, I guess I can try. Actually, to tell you the truth, this tune has a... it's really encumbered with history.
Uh-huh.
It's a tune called Dr. Real. Dr. Real is the name of a character in a novel I wrote about 20 years ago called The Real Life of Richard Nixon. He tempted Nixon to a sort of Faustian bargain. Dr. Real was a name that I assumed when I got out of the clink for draft resistance, when I wanted to play, and I wanted to play under an assumed name. And many of those gigs were gigs playing behind silent film. And I did that in San Francisco for a fat year under the name Dr. Real. And this is the tune that came out of that experience. Thank you.
wonderful. That's Joel Forrester at the piano. It's wonderful the way you create this really infectious rhythm and then occasionally completely subvert it.
I have no choice in the matter, Terry. Something else, something overwhelming occurs, and I have to go with it if I want to stay in the groove.
When you came up with the name Dr. Real, it was after you were a draft resister, spent some time in prison. What was it like to be in prison and not have a piano to play? How long were you in prison?
Oh, just a few months. It wasn't long. I drew a 3-year sentence. Everyone gets out quite early. Mm-hmm. There was a piano, but it was reserved for Sunday church services. And I remember it being played in a very four-square, rhomboid fashion by a member of the Gideon Bible Society, who was sort of on loan serving the lumpen, you know, déclassé. And I petitioned the warden time out of mind, you know, to allow me to play, and he always copped to the liberal democratic riff that if I were allowed to play, then all the prisoners would be allowed to play piano. And can't you picture it, Terry, these thousands of pianists lining up to take each his one moment at the keys.
You were telling me that when you were around 15 and started playing your first gig?
That's right.
That you lied to your parents about who you were playing with.
My mother, who's listening to this in Pittsburgh the day after my birthday, Mother, I'm sorry. Yes, I did lie to you when I was 15. I told you that those guys with whom I was playing at the Panther Room, you know, by the Liberty Tubes, I said they were college men. They weren't, Mother. They were just these rummies from around Pittsburgh who are probably still doing gigs at the Panther Room today.
What influence did they have on you?
Oh, I think they brought out and tempered my latent sarcasm. They were the first people, Terry, I'd ever heard use words for meanings that weren't apparent. For example, this guitar player, Ron McClure, I recall from those days, used to say beautiful man when he meant its opposite, and that had a deep impression, made a very deep impression on my head.
Think it affected the way you ended up talking?
Yes, I think so. I mean, certainly my way of thinking is very ripe by this point, and I think that I was started on that slippery slope by those guys around Pittsburgh.
So you wanted to play another piece for us?
Okay.
What's that piece called?
It's called Lunacy, Terry.
When did you write it?
Now that's in that post-jail time, San Francisco, 71, I guess.
What were you going through musically at the time, or
God
emotionally?
God knows. You know, I mean, I think R. Crumb was correct when he said that if you remember the 60s, you weren't there. Now, I have no idea what I was going through.
Okay, that's a terrific piece. I really love it.
Well, you know, I usually improvise on it, too, but you wanted the short version.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
Yeah. All right. Okay. Some of the work you're doing in New York now has to do with trying to revitalize the musicians' union and make it relevant to jazz musicians. I think it's fair to say that in New York, the musicians' union has mostly been for people in theatrical settings.
Yes, that's right.
And also for catered affairs, you know, where you're playing with a pickup band or something, and there's, you know, the musician kind of regulates what the union regulates what the standard fee is going to be for weddings and bar mitzvahs and things like that.
Yes, that's right, Terry. Luckily for those of us who spend most of our time improvising music, just in the last few years, there have been a couple ears in the musicians' union, ears that have appreciated our kind of music and understand the importance of keeping it alive. In fact, the current administration in the city of New York has been sympathetic to musicians who play real music in clubs.
What's an example of how you can make the musicians' union more relevant to jazz musicians?
Well, the example that springs into my mind is has to do with a club that fired its entire group of musicians several years ago because they attempted to bargain collectively. We found out through the musicians' union this was actually illegal by state labor standards. And using the legal force of the union, really as advisors, we decided not to recognize the firing since it was illegal. And we had a job action that we actually called a strike. It only lasted 3 weeks, and the club succumbed because they weren't used to dealing with people collectively. And we succeeded in getting a real contract. That's important because, again, this is something that people not in New York should know. The club scene is difficult in New York only because the club owners really have the upper hand. Anything that what's good about the club scene in New York is that there's no one kind of music there. And so oddballs like myself can play there because club owners don't have a clue about what music is standard or normative or popular. That's good. But as individuals, club owners can really lord it over musicians. That's why I think it's important that musicians stand together. And that also reflects, I think, a greater thing that's happening, which is just more openness among jazz musicians, less competition, an attempt to share information about gigs. And I think what's really behind that is more musical, I think, even than labor-oriented. I think musicians want our music to change, and we're all interested in a sort of a repollination of the music. We want it to keep going. We want it to turn into whatever it's going to turn into next. And so we're sharing a lot of information, musical information.
We are unfortunately running out of time. Let me ask you to play something to close us out.
Oh, God, I'd love to. Actually, what I have in mind to play is a tune that I wrote for one of my fellow two-fisted pianists, Joe Ruddock. Pictures him, if you will, as a matador, and it's called In the Ring. Thank you.
just great. Joel Forrester has been playing for us. And Joel, do you have any solo records you plan on making?
Oh, plans. I guess eventually.
Goals, Joel. What are your goals?
It's all in the moment, Terry. No, I just want to keep on writing music. I think maybe this summer I'll be playing solo at the Montreal Jazz Festival, though.
Great. Well, I thank you so much. It's really been just wonderful to hear you play. Thanks so much for coming to Fresh Air.
Oh, it's been wonderful to be here.
Joel Forrester is pianist, composer, co-founder of the Microscopic Septet, and they do have several records out. Joel, can you play us out?
I'd love to.